Less than an hour ago, the White House announced the shocking news that President Roosevelt died this afternoon of a cerebral hemorrhage at Warm Springs, Georgia, at 4:35 Eastern wartime. The news tickers in the CBS World Newsroom tapped out that fateful message, FDR dead, at 5:57 Eastern wartime. We whose duty it is to report the news over the air wanted badly to believe it wasn't true. Sat before our microphones in stunned silence, wanting very much not to say what had to be said. And since those first fateful words of the president's death, CBS correspondents in Washington have been at the White House to get as much of the details of the president's passing as possible. Now for a full report, we take you to Washington, Bill Henry reporting.
President Roosevelt's death this afternoon took Washington completely by surprise. At about 5:45 Eastern wartime, the handful of reporters in the White House press room were called in by Secretary Bill Hassett, who informed them that the president had died suddenly, and like a good reporter that he used to be, Bill urged them to rush and send out the news without awaiting any further details. Visibly affected, he told them that as soon as further information was available, he would give it to them. Here are the further details. The president, who had been at Warm Springs for several weeks since his return from Yalta, was apparently in good health this morning. Mrs. Roosevelt and Admiral McIntyre, his personal physician, were both in Washington. He was following his usual routine, and nobody had the slightest worry about him, to all appearances. At 3:05 Eastern wartime, Warm Springs called the White House and informed Admiral McIntyre that the president had fainted while sitting for a portrait. An architect was sketching him. Commander Paulin, an expert, was called by Admiral McIntyre and went at once to the cottage. He took charge and called Admiral McIntyre back at 3:30, saying that the president had been moved from the studio where he had been posing and that his condition was about the same. There were continuous telephone calls back and forth between Warm Springs and the White House, but there was no indication of approaching death until at 4:35, Commander Paulin told Admiral McIntyre that the president had died. Presidential Secretary Steve Early immediately called Mrs. Roosevelt, who was at the Sawgrave Club, and told her to come as quickly and as quietly as possible to the White House. When she arrived in a few minutes, he broke the news to her, and Mrs. Roosevelt's words were, "I am more sorry for the people of the world and of the United States than for us." The president's daughter, Mrs. Bettinger, was at the Bethesda Hospital where her son Johnny has been suffering from illness, and she immediately hurried to the White House when she was called. Steve Early called Vice President Truman. By this time, it was sometime after 5 o'clock, and Mr. Truman hurried to the White House, where he is at the present time. He did not know exactly what had happened until Mrs. Roosevelt spoke to him and said simply, "The president passed away." He said, "What can I do?" And Mrs. Roosevelt said, "What can I do for you?" The members of the president's cabinet were immediately called in the meeting. They began arriving almost at once from various parts of the city, and they met with Vice President Truman, and they are still in session with him. Vice President Truman said that no press conference would be held at the present time, nor would he make any statement. But he asked Steve Early to tell the public that he intended to carry on, and as the various members of the cabinet arrived, he asked them to remain with him. It is believed now that the Chief Justice is on his way to the White House, and it is presumed that on his arrival, Mr. Truman will be sworn in to be the President of the United States. That is the information as we have it here now, and I return you to General Electric Radio in New York.
President Roosevelt's passing is not only tragedy for America, it will be a terrible blow to all peoples fighting for justice and decency, and among those who will feel it as deeply perhaps as we are the people of England. Now for a report on the reaction in England to the news of the president's death, we take you to London, Douglas Edwards reporting.
It is morning in Britain. I can say that London and the British nation are deeply shocked at the news which flashed from Warm Springs tonight. The first word we had of the death of the president came about midnight London time over the BBC. I was in a Red Cross canteen filled with American soldiers getting a late-night snack at the time. They were stunned by the news. Everyone wondered if there couldn't be some mistake. Both King George and Prime Minister Churchill were informed immediately and were deeply shocked and grieved, of course. There has been no statement from them yet. I talked to the American Embassy a few minutes ago, and Ambassador Wynant was not available for comment. Britain will always remember President Roosevelt as one of the first men who saw the danger, even before America entered the war. He was the man who sent to these islands the implements with which to fight after the dark days of Dunkirk. This is Douglas Edwards in London, returning you now to New York.
We here at home have lost a beloved leader. Our troops fighting in the field have lost a leader and also their commander-in-chief. And now for a report from Supreme Allied Headquarters, we take you to Charles Collingwood.
The French didn't hear of the death of President Roosevelt until midnight their time. But the news has swept through Paris like wildfire. Everyone has telephoned everyone else. Everyone I've talked to has repeated the same phrase. It is a great loss for France. To the French, Franklin Roosevelt was their hope. They believed in him. They believed in his goodness, his humanity, his love for their country. In these last few years, through all the wordy storms which raged around the fate of France, the French themselves never lost the faith that the president would stand by them. During the black days of the German occupation, there was no voice which sustained them as his did. His own burning sureness that the right would triumph helped keep sure their own belief. Now he is gone, and for all the peoples of the world who were beaten and oppressed, it is as though a light went out. General de Gaulle is now writing the official French condolence, but it cannot say more than what a little old French lady said to me a few minutes ago. "I shall go into mourning," she said. "I felt that he was my friend." This is Charles Collingwood in Paris, returning you to New York.
And now briefly the news from the battlefields of the world where American soldiers and Allied soldiers of many nationalities and faiths have been fighting for that one aim which was always President Roosevelt's. Tank columns of our American Ninth Army are across the Elbe River, the last natural barrier before Berlin tonight, have 57 miles to go to the outskirts of the German capital, about 75 miles to its heart. The Ninth Army awaits only orders from its commander to begin the dash down the wide open road leading to the German capital. At the same time, the British to the north and other Americans and French to the south have cut loose or eating up the miles eastward into the right. And now for more details, specific details of those armies, three tank columns of the United States Third Army ripping beyond the heart of Germany in dashes of up to 46 miles that have overwhelmed Weimar, birthplace of the German Republic, are 129 miles from the Russian lines, 129 miles from splitting Germany and forming a solid front which will carve up the remains of Hitler's Klausenger fortress. On the Italian front to the south, the British 8th Army across the Senio in force today bridged the San Terno River, fighting bitterly under an air umbrella to break out into tank-fighting country in the lower Po Valley. Although the Germans are giving ground steadily, the official Allied communique makes no claims that the enemy's eastern Italian front has been seriously breached. And General Mark Clark has told the partisans in the north that the final battles for the liberation of Italy have begun, but has warned them that the time is not yet ripe for them to strike. On Europe's eastern front, Soviet shock troops cleared another 60 blocks of buildings in Vienna and cut the railroad and highway running north from the city to Brno in Czechoslovakia. The Red Army has only 7 miles to go to encircle the city completely. Berlin virtually wrote off the Austrian capital as lost, said the decision is at hand, the battle is rapidly approaching a climax. In the Pacific, superfortresses from the Marianas, escorted by fighters from Iwo Jima, founded the Nakajima Musashino aircraft engine plant in Tokyo for the 7th time as another force of B-29s in the longest mission yet from the Marianas bases hit Koriyama, an industrial center some 110 miles to the north. That's the latest news. We will continue to bring you news of the president's passing as the bulletins come into CBS World News. This news program, edited by John Daly, was brought to you by General Electric Radio. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.